Mike Malloy here. Welcome to the program. So how you doing today? Are you a returning Iraq War veteran who had your skull fractured in Oakland, California last night? You're not? Well, we'll talk about the man that happened to a little bit later in the program tonight. From Gary in Petaluma, the Oakland Polizei Department has a rich history of violence, abuse, and thuggery, gleefully supported by the city council. Men, women, children, they don't give a damn. Start beating and shooting the unarmed protesters like the professionals they are not. Please don't let Oakland be the first to kill someone. Oakland is already the armpit of the Bay Area. Gary in Petaluma. What does that mean? We'll get to that in a moment. This hour is being sponsored by James Herlihy. Okay, Mike, he writes, no more haiku. How about teabagger limericks? No, just kidding. Keep up the good work. Thank you. Thanks, James, for not including a teabagger limerick. Oh, yeah, this is a guy that came up with the haikus. Yeah, Thanks, James. James is sponsoring this hour. According to Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs, has it been released yet? I'm not sure. I guess it's everybody has a copy in media. According to the book, Steve Jobs told Rupert Murdoch that Fox News was, quote, a destructive force in our society, end quote. That's according to the biography by Walter Isaacson. Isaacson writes that after speaking at a News Corporation retreat, Steve Jobs got alone with Murdoch and unloaded on him. Jobs told him over dinner, quote, you're blowing it with Fox News. The axis today is not liberal and conservative. The axis is constructive, destructive. And you've cast your lot with the destructive people. He went on to say, Fox has become an incredibly destructive force in our society. You can do better. And this is going to be your legacy if you're not careful. End quote. Jobs told Isaacson that he thought Murdoch did not really like how far Fox News had gone. Jobs said, quote, Rupert's a builder, not a terror downer. I've had some meetings with James Murdoch, and I think he agrees with me. I can just tell, end quote. You are a destroyer. Fox News has become an incredibly destructive force in our society. You want a quick example of that? If you go to AOL, I know. But if you go to AOL, when you open up on the front page, on their news page, you'll see a story that says, guess what, I think it says, guess what Acorn is doing now. You remember Acorn, the activist organization that had worked for years to help the poor, the working poor, get social services, be able to get a house, so on and so forth. And then right-wing thugs put together a video that was all nonsense. And, of course, capitalist America went ape poop over that video. And all of a sudden, Acorn was totally defunded. Next thing you know, they're out of business. So according to Fox, And by the way, this is how agitprop works. This is how an agitprop organization works. Agitation, propaganda. This is Fox News. First of all, listen to this. This is scattered throughout this article. I want you to hear these words. Sources tell FoxNews.com. Sources tell FoxNews.com. According to several sources, sources said, the sources said, sources said, sources said, sources who participated in the teachers' union campaign said, one source said, current staff members at NYCC said, one source said, multiple sources said, one NYCC staff member told FoxNews.com, the source said, the source said, another source. Now, I went through this article, printed it off, and went through it and highlighted. There's not a single name, not a single example of attribution of all these quotes. Everything you just heard me say are quotes that FoxNews.com has put up on their website and AOL has glommed off and put on the front page of their opening their homepage, AOL's opening page. Not a single quote to attributed to anyone. This is how agitprop works. This is how this is what Steve Jobs was talking about. Fox News has become a destructive force in society. I mean, I could read this to you, but what they're saying is that the Occupy movement is really being run, organized, financed by Acorn. This is what Fox News does.
Former New York office for Acorn, the disbanded community activist group, is playing a key role in, quote, leaderless, end quote, Occupy Wall Street movement, organizing guerrilla protest events and hiring canvassers to collect money for various causes while spending it on protest-related activities, sources tell Fox News.
That's just one example of the sentences that are in this article that should be used as bathroom tissue.
It works out of the former Acorn office in Brooklyn, uses old Acorn office stationery, employs much of the old Acorn staff, and, according to several sources, engages in some of the old organization's controversial techniques, blah, blah, blah. Sources said NYCC, that's New York Communities for Change, sources said NYCC has hired about 100 former Acorn-affiliated staff members, blah, 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 paying $10 an hour. Homeless people recruited from shelters are being paid to support the protests at a rate of $10 an hour, the sources said. Sources said cash donations collected by NYCC, blah, blah, blah. In one case, sources said NYCC staff members collected cash donations for what they were told was the United Federation of Teachers fundraising drive, but the money was diverted to the protest. Sources said. Sources. Sources.
You see how this works. You see how this works. I'm serious. I would love to... I'd love to get one of these lying bastards and do to them what my sainted grandmother used to do to me back in the days of lava soap. I guess lava soap is still around, people tell me. But I'd like to get someone, anyone at Fox News, I don't care who it is, Rupert Murdoch, all the way down the food chain to this little prick Sean Hannity. Just let me have one of these people. Let me have them alone in a bathroom with a big old cake of lava soap. And don't worry how I'll do it, but I will guarantee you I will pry their mouth open and wash their mouth out with soap for the lies that they tell, for the destruction that they're doing to this society. As Steve Jobs told Rupert Murdoch, you have become a destructive force in this society. No kidding. So if you want to see agitprop in action, just open AOL.com. And take a look at the news story on the front page. And then help me figure out how to get one of these Fox News employees alone in a bathroom and where I can wash their mouth out with soap. And once I do one, then, of course, I'm going to start doing the other ones. One at a time. Okay? My grandmother did it with me because she was such a good Christian, and it was her way of getting me never, ever, ever to tell a lie and certainly never to say a cuss word. To my grandmother, a cuss word was like darn or geez. Did it work? God damn, it didn't even come close.
Attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
The Obama administration today gave the okay, the green light to a permit that allows BP to go ahead and drill a new well in the Gulf of Mexico. That's the first such approval for the company since last year's massive spill. Now, this is after... I know what you're thinking. You said that last week. No, last week it was the Interior Department's Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement approved BP's supplemental exploration plan. The approval of that plan laid the groundwork for today's drilling permit approval. Now, by the Obama administration saying, okay, here's your permit, that means that the oil company can resume drilling in the Gulf anytime they want to do it. This is, what, a year and a half after the spill that dumped 5 million barrels of oil into the Gulf, right? So, the director of Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement, Michael Bromwich, said Wednesday that BP, said today that BP complied with a series of... enhanced safety and environmental standards put into place after the oil spill, which resulted in the deaths, of course, of 11 workers. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, then everything's all right. Bromwich said in a statement, quote, BP has met all of the enhanced safety requirements that we have implemented and applied consistently over the past year. In addition, the head of the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement said, in addition, BP has adhered to voluntary standards. Ooh, voluntary standards that go beyond the agency's regulatory requirements. This permit was approved only after thorough, well-designed blowout preventer and containment capability reviews. So all is well. Everything's fine. The permit allows BP to begin drilling an exploratory well about 250 miles south of Lafayette, Louisiana, in more than 6,000 feet of water. The Democrat from Massachusetts, Representative Edward Markey, went ape poop over this decision today. He argued that the Obama administration should not allow BP to drill at least until it has paid fines from last year's spill. Now, there's a radical thought. Markey said in a statement today, quote, the fact that BP is getting a permit to drill without yet paying a single cent in fines is a disappointment. A disappointment. A disappointment is when you're expecting a wallet for your birthday and you get a tie. That's a disappointment. This is a betrayal. He goes on and says, this does not serve as an effective lesson of deterrence for oil and gas companies. You're right, Representative Markey. It doesn't. But then it's not supposed to. That's the whole point. Markey also said, quote, the Obama administration should move with all haste to assess and collect the fines from BP's spill. And BP should do its part as a good corporate citizen and end its litigation over the size of the spill, which determines the fines it will pay, end quote. Ah, yes. Barack Obama, the great liberal, progressive president of the United States. Just ask any on-air liberal or progressive, except for two of us. Oh, and Obama's student loan BS today. Obama was in Denver giving a speech to a bunch of students recalling his struggles with student loan debt. As he unveiled this plan today that could give millions of young people some relief on their payments, Obama said it's never been more important to get a college education, but it's also never been more expensive. He said his plan will help not just individuals, but the nation, because graduates will have more money to spend on things like buying homes. Obama said, quote, our economy needs it right now, and your future could use a boost right now. But this doesn't go into effect until 2012. And it's my understanding that it won't necessarily affect, or maybe it will affect debt that's already out there. But if he's using the terms right now, then why not do it, Mr. President, right now? The new order reduces the maximum required payment on student loans from 15% of discretionary income annually to 10%. In addition, the White House says the remaining debt would be forgiven after 20 years instead of 25. Wow.
To the writer's ideologies engaged. Suddenly it's repression, moratorium on rights. But did they think the politics of panic?
Flying monkeys everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by James Herlihy. His message, okay, Mike, no more haiku. How about teabagger limericks? Just kidding. Keep up the good work. Thanks, James. We have another idea here for student loans, given the reality. Cancel them all. Either debt forgiveness or a mass payment stoppage. This is the idea of a New York University professor, Andrew Ross. He was at a public atrium a few blocks from Occupy Wall Street encampment last week. And he was having a discussion about the burden of student loan debt, which is now approaching, if it's not already there, $1 trillion. It apparently is the second largest household debt in the United States. It is larger than total credit card debt. Student debt. What kind of a nation puts that kind of debt on its college students? What I see on the news tonight is an average of $24,000 per graduate in what? Didn't say how long. $24,000 per college graduate. They are that much in debt. There are no jobs. You have somebody with a master's degree in what? Comparative religion or art history or English. And there's no place they can get a job. They're going to go to work at Walmart? Yeah, that's the plan. Right? Anyway, this Professor Andrew Ross said there should be a total forgiveness of debt. I mean, the audacity of lending institutions. And they're the ones that always handle this. This is another example. The lending institutions were given the right or permission, whatever you want to call it, to lend money to college students, and the federal government, of course, would back the loans. And Obama proposed, I think it was last year, that the loans come directly from the federal government. Get the capitalist bloodsuckers. Why are they there anyway? Oh, well, to administer the loans, Mike. Oh, my goodness. Ah, I see. Did that proposal go through? You know, I don't even remember. And it really doesn't matter because this graduating class of college students who are now $1 trillion in debt. Of course, that's all student loan debt. $1 trillion. What are they supposed to do? And Obama's big plan, well, we're going to reduce it down from 15% of your annual disposable income to 10%. Ooh, oh, golly, Mr. President, thank you so much, these students must be saying, or these former students. Anyway, the professor's idea is debt forgiveness in totality of the students, former students who have all this debt. Just forgive the debt. There's a second one, a pledge of refusal. The idea is that protesters would sign a pledge to stop making payments on their student loans as soon as 1 million people had joined in making the pledge. Okay? If there's 100,000, you got to keep, you know, 997,000, you got to keep making those payments. As soon as you get 1 million former college students who are $1 trillion in debt, who have their share of this debt, as soon as they reach 1 million students, bingo, no more payments. Professor Ross told the crowd that while individuals are subject to heavy financial penalties if they stop paying on their student loans, a mass action by 1 million people would make the banks take notice. The professor said, he's a professor of social and cultural analysis. He said, quote, there's a lot of talk about student debt, but no one takes any action, and that's what Occupy Wall Street is about. Yeah, that's one of the issues. Now, the irony here, Professor Ross acknowledged the irony of protesting against one of the main sources of his salary, but he added, quote, I feel very bad that my salary has actually been financed by these debts. To me, it is just heartbreaking to see my students carry so much debt. It's immoral. There's so many things. I mean, until the Occupy movement, who focused on the depths to which these capitalist predators had penetrated every aspect of American life and taken over everything, glommed up as much as they could get their filthy hooks into, and more and more and more. It just doesn't stop, does it? And today we found out that Atlanta, Georgia has the widest income gap between rich and poor of all the major U.S. cities. That's according to the U.S. Census. It's followed by New Orleans and then Washington, D.C. In a paper released on Wednesday today, the Economic Policy Institute, a think tank, found that the ratio of the wealth held by the richest 1% of U.S. households to that held by the median household was 225-1. Now that's time for revolution. That's time to bring this madness to a stop. And that's what the Occupy movement is all about. A revolution, bloodless, except for what the Oakland police are doing. And God only knows what they're doing tonight. But a revolution, nonetheless. What does it have to get to? If the ratio now is 225-1, the richest 1% against everybody else, if it's 225-1, what's the number? What does it have to get to before the people take to the streets in the millions? Does it have to be 226-1, 250-1, 500-1, 1,000-1? What does it have to be? I'm just curious. What will it take? I guess we can just wait and see, because this this trending of the income gap to get deeper and more serious. The gap between the 1% and the rest of us is going to continue. That curve is not going to be broken. It's going to continue until the whole thing collapses. And even then, the ultra-rich, the people who caused the collapse, who caused people to lose everything, they will just smile, flip their ass at everybody else and say, see you later. I'm on my way to my favorite little island hideaway. Bye-bye. You want to see how bad it is? I've said this before. Pick up a copy of any day of the week, New York Times. Look at the front page. They'll usually have maybe one story, maybe two, about a part of the world where abject poverty, war, destruction, death, rape, disease is just rampant. And then go to page two, and you will see on page two and page three, ad after ad for $15,000 watches and $4,000 boots and $80,000 rings. And yeah, you get the point. You get the point. While here in this country, the former middle class that, in a sense, no longer exists. It certainly does not exist the way it did until the capitalists decided to destroy it. The former middle class, the working poor, whatever you want to call that vast majority of people, as the Occupy Wall Street people call it, the 99%. Take a look at what has happened to us. Take a look at what is going on here. Our college student graduates are $1 trillion in debt. Our homes are underwater. We have no more savings. The 401ks were just looted by the Wall Street crowd. Banks, how many banks failed? We don't talk about failing banks anymore, do we? How many banks failed? Where are the jobs? Hey, John Boehner, where are the jobs, buddy? And then we have the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Network, Fox News, that Steve Jobs, in this book by Walter Isaacson, declares to be an organization that is destroying the country. Gee, there's a news flash. How long have you and I been talking about that? Huh? Yeah. The New York Times, since I'm talking about them, if you go to their a blog site, it is The Lead, L-E-D-E, thelead.blogs.nytimes.com. Thelead.blogs.nytimes.com. There are all sorts of videos and eyewitness reports that are posted there, believe it or not, from the Occupy protests nationwide and some from overseas. New York Times, thelead.blogs.nytimes.com. Now, this is for the older crowd, people in my generation. There are other sites, streaming sites that younger folks go to. And, you know, okay, if you're in your 50s or 60s and you want to go to the streaming sites, those live streaming sites, go ahead. I'm just saying the site at the New York Times is pretty good. It's uncensored, unfiltered, raw video that is being fed to this site, or that the New York Times is capturing from other sites, but it is The Lead, L-E-D-E, thelead.blogs.nytimes.com. We'll be right back.
Freedom.
Hi, truth seekers. It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by James Herlihy. Thanks, James. His message, okay, Mike, no more haiku. How about teabagger limericks? Just kidding. Keep up the good work. Thank God you're kidding, James. Thanks for the sponsorship. Debbie in L.A. Lets me know that local news in L.A. Interviewed people like Dennis Zine, councilman from the Valley, and the L.A. mayor, and they are rethinking how long they will let the protesters stay at L.A. City Hall. Oakland police arrested 102 people overnight. The Iraq War veteran is in, I guess, stable condition. His name was Scott Olson, former Marine, two-time Iraq War veteran. He suffered a skull fracture because of an object thrown. He was struck in the head by something thrown by the police, some sort of projectile. That's according to the veterans group that he's a part of, Iraq Veterans Against the War. The cops are claiming, as they always do, that they were pelted first with bottles, rocks, and paint. Police then opened fire with tear gas into the crowds. It wasn't just tear gas. There were the so-called flashbang grenades. There was rubber bullets being used. It's kind of like what the Israeli Defense Force uses against unarmed Palestinians. Well, Palestinians who are armed with rocks. These are the type of weapons that the IDF used to use, and now they use live ammunition and kill folks. And it's turning into that. I talked to somebody today who said it is starting to look like the Intifada. So the Oakland violence is, of course, a turning point in what has been going on in the Occupy movement. According to Iraq Veterans Against the War, Scott Olson, a member of their group who left the Marines in 2010 after serving two tours in Iraq, the group's executive director, Jose Vasquez, claimed that Mr. Olson, quote, sustained a skull fracture after being shot in the head with a police projectile while peacefully participating in an Occupy Oakland march, end quote. That was last night. A series of bloody photographs are out there now that show Mr. Olson after he was wounded. Those photos were posted on the San Francisco Bay Area Independent Media Center's site, indybay.org, I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y, indybay.org. The images show Mr. Olson wearing a brown military shirt with his last name on the front. The photographer, Jay Finneberg, who shot the images of Mr. Olson, wrote on Indy Bay, quote, "This poor guy was right behind me when he was hit in the head with a police projectile. He went down hard and did not get up. The bright light in the second shot is from a flashbang grenade that went off a few feet from us. He looks like he might be a veteran. He was eventually taken to Highland Hospital." Aaron Glantz of the Bay Citizen, a news site in California affiliated with the Times, New York Times, reports, quote, "As of noon Wednesday, Olson, 24, remained in critical condition in Highland Hospital in Oakland. A handful of friends, many of whom are also veterans of the Iraq War, stood vigil outside the emergency room door. They said they had been informed by nurses that he was still unconscious." Aaron Hindi, an Iraq War veteran who, like Olson, is a member of the Iraq Veterans Against the War, said Olson was brought to the hospital by two Good Samaritans around 8 p.m. and lost consciousness on the way to the hospital. His roommate, Keith Shannon, who served alongside Olson in the Marines in Iraq, said, quote, "I think it's terrible for him to go do two tours in Iraq and then come home and exercise the rights he fought so hard to defend and get a serious injury like this." Well, once again, with all due respect to this injured former Marine, he wasn't there fighting for his rights. the rights that he's fighting for, he was wounded for last night. You have to fight for these rights, truth seekers, in the streets of the United States. You don't fight for these rights in Afghanistan or Iraq or Somalia or Yemen or Uganda or any place else. The fight has to be here. It has to be here. And I think people know that. An Oakland police officer told the Bay Citizen that the police department is investigating, but it may not be the Oakland Police Department that was responsible. Mr. Olson is also a member of another group, Veterans for Peace. According to Mike Ferner, that organization's director, happens to be, I consider Mike to be a friend. A short time ago, Mr. Ferner wrote in a blog spot on the Veterans for Peace website, he spoke with other members of the group, Josh Shepard, who was present at the chaotic protest. Mr. Shepard, who can be seen in photographs and video of the protest, standing between the protesters and police officers in his Navy uniform, holding a white and black flag and a copy of the Constitution, also said that Mr. Olson was struck in the head with some sort of projectile, suffered a skull fracture, is now in stable but serious condition at a local hospital. Mike Ferner also pointed to another video shot during the protests, which shows a brief glimpse of someone suddenly collapsing to the ground after projectiles were thrown or fired into the crowd of protesters. The problem here, of course, is that as you have more and more military veterans, a huge percentage of whom are going to be combat veterans, who are participating in these Occupy movements and who are being harassed or threatened by the police, don't forget, Marines are not trained in law enforcement. That's not what they're trained to do. Marines are trained to operate in a theater of war. We'll be right back. Phone lines, if you want to call in, 877-996-2556. A statement from Veterans for Peace regarding the Occupy incident in Oakland. Veteran for Peace member Scott Olson, a Marine Corps veteran, twice deployed to Iraq, is in hospital now in stable but serious condition with a fractured skull, struck by a police projectile fired into a crowd in downtown Oakland, California, in the early morning hours of today. Other people were injured in the assault and many were arrested after Oakland police in riot gear were ordered to evict people encamped in the ongoing Occupy Oakland movement. Olson is also a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Veterans for Peace members are involved with dozens of these local Occupy movement encampments, and we support them fully. In Boston, for example, our members wearing Veterans for Peace shirts and carrying Veterans for Peace flags stood between a line of police and the encampment, urging police to join the 99% and not evict the protesters. In that case, several of our members were banged and bruised when the police decided instead to carry out their eviction orders. In Oakland last night, a similar thing happened, according to Veterans for Peace Chapter 69 member and Navy veteran Josh Shepard, who said he went to downtown Oakland, quote, to see if, as a VFP member, I could help still the anger to be between the police and the protesters. It seemed unconscionable to me that the police used the cover of darkness like that to do what they were doing, end quote. Fortunately, he was not injured in the police assault that left Olson with a fractured skull. As with virtually every example of the Occupy movement across the country, those encamped were conducting themselves peacefully beforehand, protesting current economic, social, and environmental conditions in the U.S. brought about by decades of corporate control, a criminal financial industry, and wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that are driving the U.S. global empire into bankruptcy. These Occupy movement participants are telling us something we need very desperately to hear. They should be listened to, not arrested and brutalized. Police in the majority of cities are acting with restraint and humanity toward the encampments, but Veterans for Peace will not be deterred by police who choose to use brutal tactics. In fact, as happens with repression everywhere, more people join the cause. We do believe that the rank and file police officers are part of the 99%. The overwhelming majority of Americans who are suffering at the hands of an intolerable system. Layoffs and cutbacks in city after city prove that we must join together to demand justice for all. We send our very best to Scott Olson and his family and wish him a speedy recovery to health. We shall not be moved. Veterans for Peace. Now, you can find this at their website. And that website is veteransforpeace.org. Just that, all spelled out, veteransforpeace.org. But I, again, I would seriously suggest to the people who are making these decisions, like the mayor of Atlanta, who ordered the same thing under cover of darkness, to clear Woodruff Park in downtown Atlanta, where the Occupy movement has been encamped for a couple of weeks now. But I would suggest to city administrations and police officers and to this brutal 1% who will do anything to continue their grab of everything that this country has until they have the last drop of blood and then they'll start sucking on the bones. I would suggest to you people that you will not stop this movement. You will not. It's been a very long time coming. For 30 years, people have been putting up with what the capitalist system in its most degenerative form has been doing to this country and the globe. And the day has finally arrived when you have your moment here, capitalist bastards. You have your moment. Barack Obama administration, Republican Party, Democrats, power structure, you have your moment. This is the calm before a storm of proportions of which you have no concept. This is your moment to sit down and fully assess what you have done and what you're continuing to do to this country, this society. To us, the 99%. And you better reassess, and you better back off, and you better stop. You do not want this monster to wake up. You don't. And it is stirring. And I say monster because once the full understanding of what this system has done to this country is considered by the people to whom it's been done, it'd be very difficult to convince people to remain nonviolent and to use moderation. It'll be very difficult. It may still be able to be done, but it's going to be very difficult. This is just a warning from a radio talk show host that has a very teeny little audience. And nobody really cares what we say on this program except the group of us that meet here every night kind of occupy radio land. This is Occupy Talk Radio. And we're here every night, and we will be here every night. But take it with however many grains of sand you want to, power establishment. But this is the calm before the storm. Pay attention. Take some positive action. Stop brutalizing people, whether they are encamped in an Occupy movement position, or if it's people trying to survive with no job, and you rat sons of bitches are trying to cut off their unemployment comp, or you're trying to reduce their Medicare or take away Medicaid from the people who no longer can afford anything. You sons of bitches, you better pay attention. Seriously. And you better pay attention to these veterans. The last line of that statement from Veterans for Peace, "We shall not be moved. Like a tree that grows beside the water, we shall not be moved." It's an old civil rights song. You better pay attention. Seriously, you better pay attention. Especially, I might add, now that you have combat veterans who are participating in these demonstrations. You know, don't let this situation get to a point, power structure, where peaceful nonviolence becomes something that thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of so-called occupiers used to do. Wake up. Pay attention.
The Union is behind us. We shall not be moved. The Union is behind us. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's standing by the water. We shall not be moved. We shall not. We shall not be moved. We shall not. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's standing by the water. We shall not be moved.
We will stand and fight together.
We
will stand and fight together.
We shall not be moved, just like a tree that's standing by the water. We shall not be moved. We shall not be
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Derek is in Rincon, California. Hello, Derek.
No, Rincon, New Mexico.
Oh, New Mexico. Hey, Derek.
Hey, I hope the president enjoyed his $8,000 a plate dinner in San Francisco at the W while that Marine got his head broken.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything yet about how the protests outside the W Hotel went. Maybe somebody will let me know.
Yeah. That was my comment.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Derek. I appreciate it. Take care.
Jeremy is in Burlington, Vermont.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, I'm pretty sure we're pressing towards a tipping point with the police and these protesters. If they keep doing these 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning raids with using tear gas, billy clubs, and riot gear, well, those are the police agencies. They're going to get a fight back eventually. It's going to turn ugly real fast.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we are not Gandhian. This is not a society where passive resistance is seen as the most effective way to get things done. I think the Occupy people, I think most young Americans and even middle-aged Americans realize that the power differential between the national security state and us citizens is immense. But by the same token, there's a streak of violence in this country that's always been there. It had to be there for us to come here and brutally murder and isolate indigenous people, and then brutally murder and control a slave population. So there is, and then the reaction from those two races against that kind of oppression. So there's an awful lot of incipient violence, undercurrent of violence in this country that once uncorked is going to be almost impossible to put back. I just hope that the social scientists who might be advising, if such a thing happens anymore, advising these police departments or the mayor's offices or the power structure, I hope they're letting these folks know that they're tampering with a keg of dynamite here.
I also want to say I find it ironic that he's kind of like a free speech zone started under Bush.
Right.
And yes, he was a neocon to the extreme in his own way, even though he was a dumbass. But he did all those things, and you would think Obama coming in with a different point of view, we were hoping, would change some of these things. And no, he's making them worse.
Right.
He's not saying a word about it, almost not even acknowledging it's happening.
Yeah, and when he does, it's in a very oblique way, you know, talking about those folks have a point of view that a lot of folks have. I wish Obama would stop with the those folks kinds of comments and maybe say, you know, maybe just tell his cabinet or his handlers or his people, look, there is a dynamite keg sitting out there and it's about to blow. We better notify police departments to back off. But rather than do that, Jeremy, you know what will happen. Obama will just give permission, if it's necessary, for military force to be used, at least a military presence. We've seen this in this country before. Usually in a more positive way to enforce civil rights in this country, the right of kids to go to schools once segregated schools were declared to be unconstitutional. But you know, to see the military come out, not unlike Kent State, of course that was a state operation, but to see the military come out to enforce this oppression, I don't think the American people are going to be able to handle it. And I think at that point, it's game on in a very negative, nasty, ugly way.
Mike, keep up the good work. We got your back.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot, Jeremy. Appreciate you checking in. Jeff is in Holbrook, Arizona. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. You were talking about Veterans for Peace, and every year, except for last year, I couldn't do it, but they run a program where they buy phone cards for veterans that are in the hospitals.
Yeah.
So they can make phone calls home at Christmas.
Right.
They get a fantastic rate on it. I think they get, like, for $75 or $50, they get $100 worth of minutes. And, you know, I just wanted all your listeners to know about that when they look it up. And it's a real good way to give something to, you know, the veterans that are in the hospital.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And also, during Katrina, you know, when it came time to donate, I donated all my money to them because there was no way I was going to give it to the Red Cross and Elizabeth Dole.
Yeah, right. Well, that, I certainly hear that.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
But I just want everybody to know about the phone cards.
That's I'm glad you did. It's a good idea. That's a good idea.
All right.
Thanks,
Jeff. Hey, Mike, you're still my favorite commentator. I just wish I could get work at night again.
I hear you. Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate that.
All right, buddy. Bye.
All right, sir. Take care. We have a break here. We'll be right back with your phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
We'll be right back.
radio right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. The number here is 877-996-2556. Michael is in Glen Falls, New York, listening on XM. Hello, Michael.
How are you, sir?
Good.
Hey, I just have a question.
Sure.
Do you truly believe that these people on Occupy Wall Street are right?
Absolutely.
In saying that capitalism is evil and...
Absolutely.
And they want to abolish the very foundation that the country was found on?
No, the country was not founded on capitalism. This country was founded on mercantilism. Now, if you want to call my program, Michael, and discuss these issues with me, I insist that you have at least a working knowledge of what you're going to talk about.
Michael,
don't interrupt me. This is the Mike Malloy show, not the Michael from Glen Falls, New York show. Do you understand? You're a guest in my house. So let's show a little respect or I'm going to hang up on you. We did not start this country with capitalism. Jefferson, Adams, Washington, Franklin were not capitalists. Such a thing did not exist until the 1830s. What we had in this country was a form of agrarian mercantilism. Now, what I would suggest you do, Michael, is go do your homework. Call me next week when you know what the hell you're talking about. Wow. No, don't do that. Don't. I've said this over and over and over again. If you're a right winger like Michael is, if you want to talk and you can carry on a conversation, able to define what you're saying and have working definitions where we can have a conversation, fine. But if you can't do that, call Sean Hannity. Call Rush Limbaugh. They don't care if you're stupid. Call Glenn Beck. They appreciate your ignorance. I don't. Mo is in Oakland, California, listening on Green 960. Hello, Mo.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm fine.
I am honored talking to you.
All right. And, what's up, Mo?
I was there last night, and I managed to get my vehicle, and I heard you. If you're somebody who's been in Oakland, I tried to call you, and I couldn't get through. I think this demonstration is going to be going on for a long, long time.
Uh-huh. I think so, too.
And I think Oakland, people in Oakland, they won't give up. They're going to go back.
I hope that's the case. You're in Oakland now. It's what, about 7:30 there? What has it started again tonight?
Yep, they said they're going to be having a meeting at 6 o'clock. I haven't been gone back. I stopped by during the day, but last night was really chaos.
Right.
I mean, I was standing by the barricade, and these people is like an army, standing all geared up,
mm-hmm.
and they start attacking people, and you couldn't even breathe. People are going left and right
mm-hmm.
at 14th and Broadway. I wish I had the access to a computer. I will send you some pictures I took last night.
Uh-huh.
Try my best later on.
Okay, Mo, please, just send it to Mike at MikeBloyd.com. I'd love to see him.
Good luck.
Okay, thanks, Mo. You too. Take care. Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hello, Mark.
Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, good. Just hanging in there. These crowds aren't going to go away. They're going to get bigger, Mike.
Yeah, I think so, and that's what I was saying a few minutes ago. The authorities better understand that this is not just a bunch of people who are out on a lark. This is a peaceful, so far, revolution being born in this country, and the authorities and the capitalists and the power structure, all the way up to and including, especially up to and including Obama and the rest of these thugs, had better pay attention to what's happening.
Well, you know, Mike, when your Supreme Court system is corrupt, when you have a party that's totally owned by the richest people and corporations in this country. When you have those two facets going against you, you know something's going to blow up. Just a matter of time that was going to happen.
Yeah, I think so. There are a lot of people still alive who participated in some of the bloody moments of the civil rights movement here in the South. And they're all getting old, these men and women, but they can still sit down and tell you what happened, how they tried and tried and tried for years to get the power structure to understand that the time was at hand for equal protection under the law as the Constitution guaranteed. And when the time finally came, when folks realized that that was not going to happen, and the demonstrations got big and the police dogs were unleashed and the fire hoses and the clubs, and then the power structure lost. So I'm hoping that the power in this country understands what the Occupy movement is demanding. We're not demanding everybody raise their hands in the air and give us their wallets. What we're demanding is that this income inequality stop, not by taking anything away from people, but by reframing and restructuring the tax system in this country, by doing away with the predatory banking system, by ending the massive military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about 50 years ago, by freeing up students to get an education. You know, I mean, the list just goes on and on. This is very simple stuff. And this has been an incremental theft from the people of the United States. And the people who have done the stealing are the corporate people and the government people. And now we've come to a point where Americans have said, okay, that's it. So I hope, honest to God, Mark, I hope people are paying attention.
Well, Mike, you know, we're fighting for our country. We're fighting to keep justice and fairness in our country for every American. And it's not that way right now. And people are willing to fight and do whatever it takes. Now, a question I have for you is, how long is the Republican Party going to vote down these jobs bill before all hell breaks loose on that party that's wholly owned by the 1%?
That's just fascinating to me in a real morbid kind of way. How long can a drunk like John Boehner and a little sociopath like what's his name? Eric Cantor and a real nutcase like Mitch McConnell. How long can they keep doing this before they're strung up? I mean, come on. There are people out in the United States right now who are suffering, who are seeing everything disappear. They're seeing their homes go, their autos go, their jobs gone, their savings gone, their families disintegrating, their children not having a future. Do these dumb sons of bitches in both parties, but especially the Republican Party, do they really honestly, and I know the answer to this, do they really honestly think Americans are just going to sit back and say, oh, okay, go ahead, hit me again? They believe that that's what we're going to do. There is a big surprise coming, a big surprise. And again, I think these movements will remain peaceful as long as the authorities don't go berserk, as what happened in Oakland last night and Atlanta last night. When the authorities start to go berserk, then there's going to be a reaction that I think the authorities are going to realize is way, way beyond what they ever expected.
And I think these Republicans are fueling the TNT that's going to blow up. And when it blows up, it's going to blow up right in these jerks' faces.
I hear you.
Okay, brother.
All right, Mark, thanks for checking in. I appreciate your comments. John is in San Fernando Valley, California. Hello, John.
Yes, I was just wondering, now, at the very core, the Tea Party also denounces the bailout. So why is there not more of a crossover and agreement among the two groups?
Well, the bailout is as you put it, John, is not the issue that the Occupy movement really cares that much about. That's just part of it. You know, the bailout has been going on for 30 years, and the people who have been bailed out are the top 1%. that now control so much of the national wealth way beyond what the other 99% control as to render the idea of social justice almost a joke and economic justice a laugh. So I don't think the Occupy movement is, you got to understand the teabag movement was a phony, fake operation put together by the Koch brothers. The guy on CNBC who a couple of years ago started yelling about the commodities market in Chicago and a bunch of people ought to go and dump tea bags in Lake Michigan. And the next day, the Koch brothers started funding to the tune of hundreds of thousands and then millions of dollars this phony-ass movement called the Tea Party or the Tea Baggers or whatever you want to call them. The Occupy movement is spontaneous, it's organic, and it's the beginning of a revolution. If I were you, John, I would not seriously try to find equivalence between the two. Thanks, John.
The war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling. The dog just died. Everybody talking.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
About 10 before the hour. Now listen, next hour I'm going to make a huge turn in the program. I have a story to tell you about white people here in the South. And yeah, I'm going to slide into that nasty white Southern dialogue. Or a dialect that so many people don't like, but stick around because you may find it a little bit interesting. If not, it's okay. I'll excuse you. You can go do something else. Sure, you know, you can do that anyway. Cindy has a suggestion here. Not a suggestion, but she's just stating something. She wouldn't think of going to a protest without a can of Black Flag wasp spray. Yeah, that's a pretty good idea. Then when someone sprays me, I can spray back. You do two things. You carry a can of Black Flag wasp spray and an EpiPen. So that when the police tried to charge you with assault on a police officer because you're defending yourself, you can just show the judge your EpiPen and say, well, Your Honor, I thought I saw a wasp. Oh, boy. Jeff is in Montgomery, Alabama. Hello, Jeff.
Hoi, Malloy. How do you do?
I'm getting by, trying to make it through this life and get on to the next, Jeff.
Yeah, right now I'm unemployed, and I feel like making some right-wing heads explode tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I just want to make a suggestion that any military service member that gets ordered to clear out any of the Occupy Wall Street protests, I think if they have any kind of a conscience left, they should either go AWOL, move to Canada, or just don't show up.
Yeah, I would be curious. The during the Tiananmen Square rebellion in, when was it, 1989, I believe, when the Chinese young people, especially students, decided that it was time for Lady Liberty to to exist in China. The People's Liberation Army, the PLA, had said many times over the course of its history that they would never, under any circumstances, open fire on the people of China. They were the People's Army, so they certainly would never open fire. Well, we know what happened in, well, we don't know what happened in Tiananmen Square, the actual body count, but from what we've been able to gather, there were hundreds and hundreds of people who were gunned down when the Chinese government finally ordered the Chinese military to open fire, to clear Tiananmen Square, and clear the square they did. And that was the end of the short-lived moment for Lady Liberty. Now, whether or not that would happen in this country, whether or not American military personnel would open fire on American citizens, frankly, to me, is a toss-up. We have so removed the military from everyday experience. 1% of the population, if that much, that would be roughly 3.3 million people are involved in the military. The other 326 million Americans have no involvement whatsoever, unless it's a distant relative who's been going on these deployments over and over again. And the military culture, as you may or may not know, Jeff, the military culture kind of looks at the civilian culture, at least at this point in our history, with a little bit of contempt. One of the reasons is because of the fact that so many non-military people in this country are so out of shape. They seem to be adrift. They seem to have no direction in their lives. Of course, that's because of what's going on politically and economically in part.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I would hope that if the U.S. military is ever, under any circumstances, these circumstances or something in the future, were called out to protect whatever it is they would be called out to protect, and it would have to be a terribly serious situation, because the U.S. military is not to be used for law enforcement in the United States. It's only during a time of open rebellion or where the civil disorder stands a chance of overthrowing the government or undermining the rule of law or what have you. So I don't know. I'll be curious to see what happens.
Well, another example, have you ever seen the documentary Sir No Sir?
I have not.
Oh, well, it's very interesting. It talks about the anti-war movement within the military. And there was this three guys from this unit over in Fort Hood that were going to be ordered to, their unit was going to be sent down to attack the protesters over in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, hell no, we're not doing it. And then, unfortunately, they wound up getting beaten by orders of their general in the process. And but still, after that incident, they decided not to send anybody from their unit over there.
Well, I've come to know a number of Veterans for Peace and Iraq Veterans Against the War. I've been arrested with a number of them. I consider a number of them to be friends over the past 8-10 months. And I can tell you, to the last man, these are people who having been in a situation where there was carnage and war and all the destruction, the breakdown of order, the breakdown, the absence of truth, all of the stuff that occurs in a military operation in a war zone, I should say. And these men and women, a couple of women I've met in Veterans for Peace, they are people who have been tested in a very specific way, and they have come through it with the idea that the battles need to be fought here, not on the streets of Afghanistan or Iraq or Somalia, like I said earlier tonight, but on the streets of the United States. I would just say to the authorities, to the capitalists, beware of what you're tampering with. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. couple of odds and ends here that that I wanted to share with you as sort of a diversion from all the really serious madness that's going on out there. You ever get that way? Where you just think, Jesus, that's enough. I have such a distorted view of reality because, you know, I do this for a living. If you can call this a living. I know, it's an old punchline. But I make fun frequently. It's not really making fun of. It's just trying to demonstrate in my own inimitable way the stupidity that you find in this region of the country. You know, stupid white people. And I'm sure other regions of the country have equal amounts of stupidity. But I'm just saying, you know, it's been caricatured so much. The white southern moron. And it's personified so much. But, you know, I mean, just look at our political class that comes out of the South. Lord have mercy. Almost all of them men, but in the past 15, 20 years, a lot of white southern women who are just dumber than hog snot, too. You know what I'm saying? Well, in light of all that, there's a story out of Knoxville, Tennessee, that caught my attention. And what it is, this guy named Darren Wesley Huff, who's from Atlanta, or from Georgia, actually, from Dallas, Georgia, which is a suburb of Atlanta. Darren Wesley Huff, he is a Georgia birther, right? And he has now been convicted of a plot to take over a courthouse in Tennessee in order to bring down the Obama presidency. Did you follow me there? I'm sitting here staring at it, and I have a hard time with this, but prosecutors described, in Knoxville, described a frightening standoff at a Tennessee courthouse between law enforcement and an armed man who vowed to take over the courthouse in his quest to force Barack Obama to leave the White House. Now, this is where the stupid white people thing comes in. The man's attorney said that this dude, Darren Wesley Huff, was just a loudmouth expressing a political opinion. Now, you'll see how asinine that is here in just a second. His attorney says that Darren Wesley Huff was just a loudmouth expressing his political opinions. Well, Darren Wesley Huff was convicted yesterday on a federal firearms charge that could send him, one hopes, to prison for 5 years. I think he ought to be in prison longer than that. Huff, who is 41, was armed with a Colt 45, not the booze, the gun, and an assault rifle. An assault rifle. Several months back, when he and about 15 other people, some also armed, arrived in Madisonville, a small town about halfway between Knoxville and Chattanooga, Tennessee. Yeah, they, oh God, how did they pick Madisonville? Well, they probably threw a dart up against a map as they were swilling down their booze in a bar. So let's go and take over that one. When they arrived at the small town courthouse, about 100 law enforcement officers also were there because Darren Wesley Huff had told an FBI agent who had visited his home in Dallas, Georgia, a couple days earlier, and police who had stopped him for a traffic violation in Tennessee. A couple days after that he was prepared to help take over the Monroe County Courthouse if necessary. Special Agent Mark Van Balen wrote in a pretrial affidavit, quote, Huff said he was ready to die for his rights and what he believed in, He's going to die for his rights and what he believed in. Now, you still with me on this? Okay. Hoff, of course, was convicted of carrying a firearm in interstate commerce with the intent to use it in a civil disorder. Whew. The prosecution presented the courthouse plot as a serious and frightening scenario. The district attorney there testified, quote, "It was the tensest day we ever had had." The district attorney coordinated the law officers that day as they prepared against the plot that Huff had described. See, he had told FBI and he had told some police that stopped him for a traffic violation. I don't know what it was, but he had said to all these law enforcement, "Yeah, we're going to go up there and take over a courthouse and try to get Obama out of office." And why do you want Obama out of office? "Well, he's taking away my rights." Well, what rights? That obviously not your right to harm yourself and carry guns. Well, don't confuse me now, because I'm armed and dangerous. His defense attorney, Scott Green, told jurors at the beginning of the trial last week, I can just see this, "Every one of you may think that Huff and the other boys are kooky as all get out." Kooky? A goddamn army of redneck drunks armed with assault rifles show up at a courthouse to take over? No, Mr. Defense Attorney, that's not kooky. Kooky? Who uses that word? Kooky, kooky, lend me your AK-47. Oh, my God. The defense attorney said that Darren Wesley Huff was a loudmouth, but not the very scary guy they've been trying to paint him as. Oh. Well, if you're confronted with somebody who is armed with a 45 caliber sidearm and an assault rifle, I'm sure it was fully automatic, too, or at least semi-automatic, assault rifle. If you're confronted with him, and if you could see this guy's picture, I'm sorry, but, I mean, he looks like the banjo player in Deliverance, all growed up. You know what I'm saying? He does. "I'm over here because that Negro in the White House is really pissing me off." Well, why are you coming to a little old town in Madison, you know, in Tennessee, Madisonville, Tennessee, to take over a courthouse? Don't confuse me with all that kind of stuff. I'm here to make him leave a White House. Well, okay, but how is taking over a little courthouse in rural Tennessee going to make the President of the United States leave? I mean, have you thought this through at all?
Nobody'd ever get shot, because everybody'd have a gun.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
We wouldn't need the police no more, because everybody'd have a gun.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
Had a gun.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
Had a gun. Nobody'd ever get shot, because everybody'd have a gun.
Makes sense. Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? We'd go out and shoot things. We'd go out.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Oh, 21 past the hour. All right, I just for the sheer hell of it, I'm telling you about Darren Wesley Huff, who was convicted yesterday on a federal firearms charge, and hopefully he'll go to prison for up to 5 years. He showed up at a courthouse in rural Tennessee, halfway between Chattanooga and Knoxville. And let me tell you, there's not a whole lot halfway between Chattanooga and Knoxville. There just isn't. So this moron and some of his moronic white boy buddies, they arm themselves and they decide to go to this courthouse and take over. And, of course, this guy has diarrhea of the mouth like a lot of these gun-toting, Bible-thumping, redneck freaks do. Yeah, we're going to get rid of that boy in the White House. Yeah, well, how are you going to do that, sir? We're going to take over a courthouse. So he shows up, and there are a bunch of cops waiting for him after he shot his mouth off and told everybody what he's going to do. He said that he was motivated to go, motivated? Oh, that's the word here. He said he was motivated. I'm motivated to go to Madisonville, Tennessee, and take over the Madison County or the Monroe County Courthouse. I'm not making this up. By someone named Walter Fitzpatrick. Now, Walter Fitzpatrick is a retiree, a Navy retiree, who has some kind of a hassle against the federal government since he faced a court-martial decades ago. All right? Now, of course, the government really doesn't have, the civilian government doesn't have a whole lot to do about a court-martial conducted by the Navy. That is, it comes under the military justice system, right? But never mind, never mind. Anyway, this dude, Walter Fitzpatrick, was facing charges. Now, this has nothing to do with what happened when he was in the Navy. But he was facing charges in the eastern Tennessee town, Madisonville, because he tried to use a citizen's arrest warrant to take into custody local officials who wouldn't pursue a legal case to throw Obama out of office. You follow me? You still there? No. Okay. All right. Now, Fitzpatrick got a warrant that called the local officials domestic enemies and called Obama an illegal alien infiltrator and imposter. Okay, you got the setup now, okay? So this guy, Walter Fitzpatrick, he got all pissed off because the people in this little rural-ass community with this little rural-ass courthouse, that, you know, people in there who, you know, a big day is when they have to go put down a dog wandering the back roads because he's foaming at the mouth. That's a big day for these folks. So here, this guy shows up, and he wants a citizen's arrest warrant taken out against Obama because Obama is an illegal alien. You see, now, this is Rick Perry and Donald Trump and Glenn Beck stuff, right? So, Obama's an illegal alien, an infiltrator, and an imposter. Now, how does our boy Darren Wesley Huff figure into all this? Well, Darren Wesley Huff, having his brain just softened up to the point where it's just like mush by everything he sees on the Rupert Murdoch Terror broadcast television network and everything he hears from the crazy people like Glenn Beck and what's his name, the pig man. Poor old Darren Wesley Huff, he couldn't find his ass with both hands anyway, but he's got guns. So when he hears, well, you know, this old boy Fitzpatrick over here, he wants to get a warrant to get rid of the Negro, and they won't give it to him because that Negro's from Kenya. And we all, where's he from? Kenya. Where's Kenya? I don't know. It's over around, I don't know. Okay, so now what are you going to do, Darren Wesley? I'm going to get my guns and I'm going to go help him. Help him what? We're going to take over the courthouse. And you're going to do that because, I don't know. I got my 45 because ain't no government official going to go peacefully. He said that to the police. Now, his lawyer said that Darren Wesley Huff had a permit to carry the guns and the right to express his opinion. And he really didn't cause a disturbance. The attorney said, look, somebody shows up. I can just hear this. Somebody shows up at the courthouse and wants to swear out a citizen's warrant. And happens to be armed with an assault rifle and a .45 caliber sidearm and has about 8 or 10 other people with him, and they're all carrying Confederate flags, and they're all bearded up and drunk and wandering around. They're just there because they're just some good old boys having fun. Ain't nothing to worry about. And then they go ahead and arrest him and charge him with this. God damn, I'll tell you something. It is just fun as hell living in the South. Yeah. small business.
Let Mike do it for you.
Well, or something. Yeah, well, that figures. You know, you're getting this radio station program here out of the foothills of North Georgia Mountains, so when we have something mess up like that, you know. What we're talking about here, I'm almost done. For the three or four people still left listening, but the guy's name is Darren Wesley Huff. Picks he and some of his cohorts and pick out a courthouse in rural Tennessee, just north of the Georgia state line, and they descend on the courthouse armed to the teeth, and they have waiting for him all kinds of law enforcement because Darren Wesley shot off his mouth about what he was going to do. So he shows up 45 caliber sidearm and an assault weapon and yada yada yada, and he's there to back up someone named Fitzpatrick or Fitzgerald or Fitzhugh or so whatever the hell his name is, Fitzpatrick, who was facing charges in this eastern Tennessee town, Madisonville, because he got all pissed off because the employees at the courthouse wouldn't issue a citizen's arrest warrant on the Negro in the White House. And, you know, I'm getting tired of that boy. He wasn't even born here. Yeah, okay. So, anyway, Darren Wesley Huff was found guilty by a jury, and he's going to go to prison for up to 5 years. And in the closing part of his trial, he took the stand, and he said, he started crying when he's up on the stand. He said, I can't believe that y'all thought that I'm some kind of a domestic terrorist. He did. He was fighting back tears as he told the jurors how hurt he was that, quote, my government has called me a potential domestic terrorist. Yeah, I mean, that's really weird, isn't it? Darren Wesley, isn't it weird you show up with an assault rifle and a 45 caliber sidearm at a courthouse and people think you're a terrorist? And you're threatening to kill people. I'll be damned. I never heard anything like that. And he went on to say, I've never made a statement about taking over the courthouse, the city, the state, nothing. I never said anything about taking anything over. Well, the problem with Darren Wesley Huff saying that is that they had testimony to employees of his local bank who testified he had threatened to take over the courthouse. They're the ones who called the FBI, who then visited Darren Wesley at his home northwest of Atlanta the day before he left for Tennessee. You still with me on this? So anyway, his defense attorney, when all this was over, and the jury found him guilty as charged, his defense attorney walked outside. He wouldn't comment on the verdict, but when he spoke to the Associated Press on Monday, he quoted former New York City Mayor John Lindsay. Go figure. He quoted Lindsay as saying, quote, those who suppress freedom always do so in the name of law and order, end quote. Darren Wesley was immediately taken into custody and hauled off someplace, hopefully out in the woods where they horsewhip his ass before they send him on to a Tennessee State Penitentiary or wherever he's going to go. But, I mean, stories like this, these white Southerners who run around in their Klan regalia and their camo and have all these weapons in their house, you know, when it gets down to where they get busted, they're put on trial for their dumbass activities, and they sit on the stand and they cry. I can't believe any of y'all thought I was a terrorist. You know, they just whine and their nose runs. And, you know, I'm sure his mama was sitting in the back of the courtroom just with a box of Kleenex wanting to run up and wipe his nose and say, Darren Wesley, are they treating you bad? You know, it's just everything you have ever read that stereotypes Southern white people is just about damn the truth. You know what I'm saying? It's just about the truth. I can say that about Southern black folks, too. I'm not just picking on whites. It's just something about here. Something about here. You know, they have governors like Haley Barbour, They have senators like Jeff Sessions. I mean, it's just, it's madness. But it's also like living in a funhouse. It's just so crazy. A lot of people ask me, well, why don't you leave? How can you stand it in the South? Are you kidding me? Miss a freak show like this 24/7? I mean, I don't have to go see some dark comedy play out on a stage someplace. All I have to do is leave my house, jump in the pickup, drive about 15 minutes, park the pickup, get out, pick up a piece of grass growing on the courthouse lawn, stick it between my teeth, sit on a park sit on the courthouse bench, kick my feet up, and watch. It's just astonishing. Yeehaw, yeehaw, and yeehaw. I just thought I'd throw that in. Has nothing to do with all the issues that we have to deal with on this program, but I just couldn't resist that story. It just, you know, Madisonville, Tennessee. Go ahead, look it up. Look, just do it. Get your Google map. Go ahead, find Madison. See that? See that little old dot? And this is where these rednecks think, well, you know, we're going to take over. And you know who they're going to take over? Have you ever been? I don't know if you folks have ever traveled in the rural South. I have spent 40 years in the rural South, and trust me, it's like Monroe County, Tennessee. Now, I don't think I've been there, but I have been to other places that are exactly like it. They have a courthouse. In some instances, it was built before the War of Northern Aggression. In other instances, it was built subsequent to the War of Northern Aggression. But they're sleepy little towns. There's just nothing. I mean, it's like, it's not even as exciting as it was in To Kill a Mockingbird, Harper Lee's book. It's just not. There's no there. And you have a bunch of these rednecks come riding into town in their pickups and their Hummers and Jeep vehicles, and they're armed to the teeth. And inside that courthouse, there might be a couple of old white women, a couple of old black men who work in there, do things like shuffle paper, file deeds, sit around, take a 3-hour lunch break, and go down the street to mom and pop's restaurant and eat hog jowl and whatever the hell stuff they eat down there. But there might be a clerk of courts in there, and there's somebody from the Game and Fish Commission has a little office in there. I mean, it's just a sleepy rural, big old ceiling fans going whoom, 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 moving the air around, and nothing's happening, nothing's moving. And all of a sudden, these cars and trucks pull up, and out jumps these rednecks from Tennessee and Georgia ready to take over. Oh, I swear to you, it's like I don't know, it's hard to describe. It is just a scene of stereotypical craziness. But as long as nobody gets hurt, it's just funny. It's just funny as hell. The problem is, we were talking, when was it, last night, about a death to the Klan rally back in the 80s. Was it the 80s? In Greensboro, North Carolina, where a bunch of CPUSA, you know, white communists who are just sick of being harassed by the Klan. And they're going to march. And they're marching somewhere in Greensboro, and all of a sudden a couple of cars pull up and full of Klan and redneck, and they're all armed, and they just open fire, start killing folks left and right. I mean, that's when it's not funny. When it's like this case with poor old Darren Wesley Huff, who decides to join an expeditionary force out of rural Georgia to take over a courthouse in rural Tennessee in order to get the Kenyan out of the White House. then it becomes funny. As long as nobody gets killed. I mean, the problem with these situations is so often somebody gets shot. And you know who it usually is? It's usually the librarian. That's right. It's usually Maud Frickett, who's just walking down the street on her way to lunch. You know, if it's Wednesday, everything's shut down anyway, but she's on her way to lunch. She's going to have a little bite before she goes home and tends her garden. And all of a sudden, she gets caught in a crossfire between the rednecks from rural Georgia and law enforcement officers from God knows where. And they start shooting at one another because the rednecks are showed up to take a warrant out on Barack Obama or something. And when it's all over, and everybody who's been found guilty, and poor old Maud is dead and buried in the family cemetery because she happened to be going to lunch at the wrong time, then the attorney for these people will say, you know, let me quote a famous American about all this. And you think he's going to quote Jefferson. I'm talking about Jefferson Davis. But he doesn't. He quotes New York Mayor John Lindsay. Those who suppress freedom also always do so in the name of law and order. Yeah, well, I guess that's one way to look at it, pal.
Gives a damn about the future of children, just building a cash flow.
10 before the hour. And just to recap, we mentioned it earlier this evening. The report is out from the Congressional Budget Office late yesterday. The top 1% in this country in terms of how much wealth they control or they have stolen, that top 1% more than doubled what they've stolen of the nation's incomes over the last 30 years. In addition, this report said government policy over 30 years, that's Democrats and Republicans in the executive and legislative branch, government policy has become less redistributive since the late 1970s, doing less to reduce the concentration of income. So, you know, again, everything Republicans say is a lie. Republicans are liars. You know, you could go to the old cliche, how can you tell when a Republican is lying? Well, is his or her lips moving? But they lie about everything except the things that they are so damn ignorant of. And even then, when the lies come out, even though they're inadvertent, they're still lies. But you've heard this talking about, well, they're trying to redistribute wealth. Take it away from the job creators. Yeah. Oh, Jesus, God. Yeah, that really resonates, doesn't it? And the thing is, these dumbasses on the Republican side, they continue to say this. Well, the numbers of Americans, percentage of Americans who are finally, I hope, beginning to come out of the ether and realizing that the Republican Party is like the fascists in Spain and Italy and Germany in the early part of the last century. They are interested only in advancing the corporatist or the capitalist agenda, and the people can go to hell. And in that process of advancing that agenda, they will say anything, they will do anything, they will lie, cheat, steal. Republicans will cut their own grandmother's throats if they thought it would give them a leg up in stealing even more from the American system, the American public. So, and generally speaking, the American public is starting to wake up to this. I hope that in this next election, the Republican Party is finally snuffed out It should be destroyed. There is no room in a political system, I don't think, in a serious political system, for an organization that calls itself a political party that is designed to further the interests of the top 1%, and the other 99% of that society can go, pound sand up one of its body orifices. Any system that allows that party to continue, any system that says, okay, well, it's okay, they're just funning around, and then when you take a look at what that party is doing, literally, in destroying the country, it should be just absolutely destroyed. Not banned, destroyed. Every single one of the Republican Party leadership should be paraded in front of the American public with a huge dunce cap and all kinds of writing on the caps that say, this is a thief, this is a liar, this is a fraud, this is somebody who wants to destroy your income, your savings, take away your home, destroy your mama and your grandmama's income, take away whatever health care you have. Here they are. These are the people doing it. Seriously. I mean, go ahead. Tell me I'm wrong. Give me an example of where a Republican in the past 30 years has done anything to forward the idea or develop the idea or the process of making life easier for people who damn sure are willing to work and play by the rules. They have not done that. So the Republican Party should be destroyed, not outlawed. You know, how are you going to outlaw a political party in a free system, Mac? Well, in the first place, the system is not free. We all know this. And the people who talk as though it were free are idiots, morons, or Republicans. But I repeat myself. So the Republican Party needs to be destroyed. I keep hoping that somehow enough voters will show up at the polls to defeat the pre-programmed programs that run these abominable voting machines. And that the Republican Party will be destroyed. And again, not outlawed, literally destroyed, choked to death, ended, thrown into the gutter, into the ash heap, the toilet of history where it belongs. I mean, this fight has been going on since the 1920s. It's almost 100 years old. I don't know about you, but in my own life and in my collective memory, I am so tired of struggling against these right-wing dogs, pigs, liars, cheats, which is every single Republican. Now, the office holders are worse, but people who vote Republican, people who think Republican, are the problem. They are not part of any solution. They're not interested in the betterment of the United States. So, you know, here it is again. In its report, the Budget Office found that from 1979 to 2007, average after-tax inflation-adjusted income for the top 1% of the population grew by 275%. And for the three-fifths of people, 60% of us in the middle of the income scale, the growth in the same period was less than 40%. Now you tell me, where has any government, Democrat or Republican, redistributed wealth downward, which is what the Republicans keep screaming, these lying pigs like Bachman and Perry and this half-wit Kane? We can keep talking about statistics like this until hell freezes over. But there's only one thing to do, and that is to provide enough resistance, enough civil disobedience, enough Americans taking to the streets, millions of us saying no, the system will change or the country stops. So what are we going to do? What are you going to do? Huh? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.